Conversations with Maria Menounos,
podcast edition.
Is there anything she can't handle? She looks fear in the face day after day, but yet she never runs. She's unbreakable. She's a warrior. She's you. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. These things happen because you have to live your true self in a bigger way.
Featuring the best of Maria Menounos' SiriusXM show with celebrity and life-changing interviews, thoughts on the week, and more. And it's free. All we ask is that you rate, comment, and subscribe on iTunes, and tell a friend to subscribe to SiriusXM. Listen to Conversations with Maria Menounos on SiriusXM Stars 109 at 1 p.m. East. And now here's your host, Maria Menounos.
What up, everybody? It's Friday. We should have some Friday music on. That would be good. Actually, every Friday from this moment forward, I'm going to have Friday music prepared.
Because, I think it's a good choice.
Yeah, I think it's a really great choice. In the co-host seat with me today is my friend AJ Jolivet. You know him as our tech guru on our normal SiriusXM show. That's daily, 10 a.m. Pacific. TGIF. Yeah, so 10 a.m. Pacific every Monday through Thursday. Well, Monday through Friday on SiriusXM, we've got our awesome show, Conversations with Maria Menounos. Welcome back, guys, to our podcast edition where we bring you free content with, fresh stuff and then best of from the week of our show on Sirius. We hope that you guys can get an entree into our show here.
Right.
Get a little taste of it.
Get hooked.
Get hooked. Yes, we're trying to get you hooked. And then hopefully you'll want to join us every day on SiriusXM. But in the meantime, if you don't have Sirius, you can catch us here. All we ask is that you rate, subscribe, send us a little review, take that extra second, let us know how we're doing and what you like and what you don't like, whatever. You can also find us on demand on the SiriusXM app. But we love doing this. Our quote of the day is, life is 10% what happens to me and 90% of how I react. Charles Swindoll. He's a Christian pastor and an author. I don't know if that's originally his quote. It must be, but I feel like a lot of people say that. And yeah, it's true. Like Anastasia, the eyebrow guru we've had on the show a million times, I always say, she's like, Maria, people, they think, you know, problems are unique. She's like, life is problems. It's just how you roll through them. Just, you know, expect them. They're going to come. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. Kind of helps. Meanwhile, we had a lot of fun this week talking about Sophia the robot on the show and what horrible things we could do to Sophia the robot. If you aren't familiar with Sophia the robot, she's a new robot. She's the first robot citizen of a country. She's a citizen of Saudi Arabia.
Yep.
And she was unveiled at the Consumer Electronics Show this week. So we had a lot of fun on the show with AJ about that on Thursday. So if you guys want to check that out on demand, I was pretty on fire right here.
She was
walking and talking. Next, she'll be driving.
Yeah. In the meantime, I was like, what can we talk about that's fun? Because today on the show, we have some amazing interviews. We're going to hear Dr. Habib Siddiqui, who is, you know, doctor to all the stars in Hollywood, from Gwyneth Paltrow to Anne Hathaway, Penelope Cruz, everybody. And he's going to help share his tips on how to cleanse yourself emotionally in order to create physical healing through his book, The Clarity Cleanse. We also have our kinesiologist, Chuck McCon, who has been with us many times on this show, who's going to teach us about codependency and narcissism and, you know, kind of help you figure out where you're leaning, because he says most people are either one or the other. And that was a really fascinating discussion, because I also made sure he told us how we can manipulate our narcissistic bosses.
That was the best part. Oh my goodness. I'm taking all of that. The third option, not to give away any secrets.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah. So if you're going to be stuck at the mercy of a narcissistic asshole boss, we are going to give you the tips on how to sweetly manipulate them for your own survival. Not bad, but sweetly manipulate them. So I was like, okay, we've got a lot of really important, juicy, meaty stuff. So we need to talk something funny at the top of this show. And so, of course, we're all trying to figure out what we're going to talk about. I go on to Twitter and I see this woman's secret to avoiding getting hit on at the gym.
Oh,
so do either of you guys work out at the gym?
Well, I get hit on at the gym all the time. I wish those guys would stop it.
AJ! Oh, my God. Okay, but do you guys work out at gyms? I know you do your Krav Maga at gym, but you...
I go to UFC gym.
Yeah.
And then I just go to my martial arts studio.
Yeah. Okay, so Lauren, do you go to a physical gym?
I do go to a physical gym.
What's that like for you?
I enjoy it. And you know what? I kind of like it when I get a look there. It makes me feel like, you know, I'm popping. Like my squats are on fleek.
Popping those squats. You shouldn't be popping those squats in the gym, by the way.
Lauren, I'm dying.
I like it. But I never get hit on in a raunchy way. It's just like if somebody looks, I'm like, okay, baby, I see you.
No, you don't. You don't get insecure or weirded out?
If someone's staring like a creep, like a serial killer, yes. But most of the time, it's just like a little side eye, and I'm okay with that.
Oh, my God. I would never have expected that from you. Well, I don't go to the gym anymore, but when I used to go to the gym, I would be so uncomfortable at the gym. I hated every second of it. I just don't like it. Like the whole environment, everyone's kind of looking at each other. Like I want to do my own thing and like look down and just get in and get out. I don't want people watching me. What are you thinking, AJ?
I think a lot of people go to the gym to watch people. So you're
really?
Yeah.
No way. I did not know this.
Oh yeah. We go to, absolutely.
That's where you're checking people out. Is that where you're going to meet people?
I mean, think about it.
And look at people.
The pants. The yoga pants, they're like the best visual for guys. Just booties out.
Okay, I'm learning a lot. Well, I haven't been to a gym in a long time because of it, because it just makes me so uncomfortable, like so deeply uncomfortable. I hate it.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure you get more because you're a celebrity too,
well,
right?
Like, so that's before,
like a different level.
Like I've done it, but I've never liked it. And now, yeah, of course, being more recognizable is like even more awkward. But this woman figured out a way how to avoid getting hit on at the gym.
I gotta hear
any ideas?
Talk to herself.
Don't go to the gym.
Nope. It's better than that. She physically goes to the gym, but how do you think she avoids getting hit on?
She hits on him first.
Nope. That was your one answer. Lauren,
I think maybe she pretends like she's crazy and like talks to herself or sings out loud.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Such a Lauren answer.
By the way, I do sing out loud.
I do too. Maybe that's why people are looking.
Okay. So this is what she wrote. Her name is Olivia A. Cole. Her Twitter handle is @RantingOwl. And she says, guys, just now in the gym, guy approaches two women working out with flirtatious eyebrows at the ready. Okay, so it isn't her. She's observing this. Mm-hmm. Girl number one, you might not want to come over here, dude. I just farted. It's bad. The guy looks horrified and leaves. And girl number two says, oh my God, did you really? And the girl number one goes, psst, no. I mean, people are going crazy. It's trending on Twitter. And I just think that that's hilarious. So this woman, another woman said, friendly reminder, 99% of women do not want to be approached at the gym. I hear this complaint constantly. It hasn't happened to me personally because I generally look pretty pissed off about being there. This is, people are like, I don't understand trying to pick someone up at the gym. This is a genius defense though. And more women just saying, no women I know want to be hit on at the gym. Use this as a rule for life.
Okay. But God, okay. So
why do you guys want to do that?
Because there has been a guy that we heard about maybe that was successful. It only takes one.
Really?
It doesn't even have to be true. Yeah, dude, I picked up this great girl. Yeah. So all of the guys think that they can pull this off. And then the narcissistic part is they believe that that's the reason they're there. Otherwise, why would they be in a gym full of guys?
Oh,
interesting. Okay. Yeah, I don't know why I would want to be hit on if I'm sweaty and smelly. Like, this is what I hate about gyms.
Guys,
like,
don't get that.
If I go, I have to look good. Everything's got to be, like, perfect, right? Like, you got to wear the right outfit. You can't be mismatched. Like, I don't want to match. I don't want to have to look good working out. I want to go in, do my workout, and leave. And it's
sometimes
just so interesting to get into the psychology of your brains.
Sometimes there are the ladies there who are part of the workout crew. You know?
They're the regulars who've got the sick bodies and they just go to flaunt their shit. And good for them. Like, enjoy your time. You work hard on your body. Have it. I'm in there and I'm just like, I don't want to be here in the first place. And I certainly don't want you to be making me feel even more insecure by watching me do whatever I'm doing and then judging whether I'm doing it right or wrong.
There's always judging going on in the gym.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I feel it. I feel the energy, and I just don't want to be a part of it.
Checking you out, judging you, seeing if, you know what, you know, she looks great, but, you know, she could really work on her triceps. What's up with that?
I never think about that.
Yeah, or for me, it's more like, oh, she couldn't hang. She couldn't do another 10 reps. You know what I mean?
I don't know about that.
Interesting.
Maybe.
It's definitely a thing.
Yeah, but my gym experience is completely different now. When I used to be in the Marine Corps and we used to go to the gym, it was for a different reason. Now I go to the gym, it's all just about martial arts. So it's completely different.
Yeah, well,
so
you're training. Gym, like, I can do that. Like, I like going in to train and learn a skill. Like, I think that's fun. And classes, I've always had, again, a hard time because I'm always the one who doesn't know what the fuck they're doing. And so I'm in the back, whether it's like, you know, a bike class or what, I'm always the lamest. And so I hide in the back.
I doubt that's true.
No, honestly, I swear to God, I really am. I'm terrible. So I always find someone who I should be able to beat, like, clearly in a competition. And I use them as my motivation because I'm like, if she can keep going, then I should be able to keep going. Come on.
Hey, you know what? Motivation is where you find it.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's all in your head anyway. It's not like she knows.
Yeah. I'm like, well, I mean, this woman, like, either she's older or is challenged in whatever way, weight-wise or whatever. I'm like, okay, I should be able to have a stronger system than this person, right? Like, I just create the scenario in my head. And then when they're crushing and I'm being like, oh my God, I'm so tired, I can't. I push through because of them.
See, but that's
like marathons. Yeah. Like, I've done like 10Ks and 20Ks, whatever the hell's they are all called.
I
always found an elderly person to be my motivation because I'm like, listen, if they can do it, then I can do it. And so that usually helps me.
That's one of the reasons working out in the gym is so great. It's important, right?
Yeah.
Because you feed off the energy and you really want to do it because you're there with other people, whereas you got the gym at the house and you've used it twice.
No, true. But that's why I usually will get a trainer to, like, I brought a trainer on board the last couple of days. I'm trying to get back into it. Uh-huh. And then I can, like, manage myself. But I like someone to kind of get me jolted and get me going. And I did consider joining the Equinox nearby because, like, everyone's going in the neighborhood, and I was like, oh, well, then if I know people, I'll feel a little safer. Mm-hmm. And but then I'm like, no, I'm gonna start chit chatting and I'm never gonna get anything done, and I'm gonna be back to square one. So no gym for me. Pure bar classes and Pilates class.
I
maybe.
Think chit chatting is fun too, though.
And a lot of walking with Max. Anyhow, guys, thank you, AJ, for joining us.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Thanks for all
me.
The fun chats during the week. Guys, I hope you enjoy our interviews this week, and be back here next week for more. Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and comment. Thanks.
From news and pop culture to fitness and health to relationships and careers.
Welcome back to Conversations with Maria Menounos. Best of the week.
My next guest, guys, is a therapist and the founder and creator of Psychoenergetic Transformation. He's been here before. Today's here to talk with us about the connection between codependency and narcissism. Narcissism. I got that right, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Please welcome Chuck McCann.
Woo! Woo, Chuck.
Chuck.
Glad to be back.
Thank you for being back.
Congratulations on your wedding. I was at New Year's Eve. I was in a cabin in the High Sierras, and I didn't even know this occurred until.
Did you watch?
I didn't see it. I don't have TV or internet, but I'll catch it. I'm sure it's all on film.
It's all over the internet.
Yeah, okay.
Everybody was invited, even Sophia the robot.
Especially Sophia.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with this robot stuff. Can you imagine if you have to do kinesiology on a robot at some point?
Oh, yeah.
Would you do it?
Sure. I don't think I'd get very good responses, but the robot's probably not programmed for that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. But that's where we could be going, guys.
It would be interesting if you had a psychologically disturbed robot, though.
Yeah. See, I feel like Chuck would totally be into it. He'd be like, you know what? It's all an experience. It's all an exploration. He would do it.
Oh, yeah.
It'd be terrifying.
So, Chuck, we want to talk about codependency and narcissism. Am I saying this funny?
Narcissism.
No, narcissism.
You got it.
Correct.
Oh my God, I'm so. And I feel like I don't know why, but I can never remember codependency, like what it is. I don't know why.
It's like that you need the other person. What was it again? And well, I'll never learn it because I've asked a million times. It just does not register into my brain. Maybe because I am codependent. Am I codependent?
No, not anymore.
Oh, good. Okay. Thank you. You got rid of that.
Well, one of the reasons that it's confusing to people is no two people are going to give you the same definition of what it is.
Oh.
I mean, it's one of these Netherland things that was first brought to the public attention, popularized in 1986 by Melanie Beatty with her very famous book, Codependency No More. But since then, there's been a lot of other research. So one person will say it's a psychological disordered way of relating to other people. Somebody else is going to say it's a reaction to how another person manipulates your behavior. Mm. Narcissism and codependency, in my idea of it, come from very similar cousins in the beginning. Nobody's born narcissistic. We're all born infantile narcissistic, but that's an exceptional subcategory because this infant can't do anything for itself.
Mm-hmm.
It depends solely on the parent for everything. It's not like a giraffe that's born and it stands within 3 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, it already has a muscle myelin built into it. Children have to be taken care of. So that's a dependency. So co really means a dependency with somebody else. And it's really a disorder for adults, not for children.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, wait, I don't have it anymore, but I think I did.
Yeah?
I was codependent with Kevin.
Yeah, we all have a degree of codependency. We all have a degree of narcissism. There's no question about that.
Yeah, I totally am not
it's
a narcissist.
It's a matter of percentage points. The origin of narcissism, nobody is born that way. They get what's called in the business a narcissistic injury, or what I call a narcissistic wound.
I like that. What is that?
That's some event in their childhood, probably.
Uh-huh.
It's usually parental inflicted, but it can also be peer inflicted.
Mm.
And I think Donald Trump has peer inflicted narcissism. And it's where there's an injury that's so great to that person. Mm-hmm. It's considered fundamentally incurable.
Cool.
Yeah. Especially real serious pathological narcissism. The high lines of that are sociopathology, psychopathology, any personality disorder. These are the high levels of that family tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody becomes a serial killer without being an extreme malignant narcissist.
Yeah, like the Mansons, the Hitlers, all these guys.
They don't see any reason they can't continue to take people's lives. I mean, it's just really, that's the narcissistic family tree. Now, I'm not saying all narcissists are serial killers, but
anyway, what's a good definition of a narcissist?
A narcissist is somebody who, out of this narcissistic injury, has decided to create an alternative reality.
Cool.
Yeah. Now, if it's really pathologically means sick, then that reality is really, you know, bulletproof. It's a full metal jacket on it. And once that person creates that reality, and that reality always has to do with them elevating themselves to being superior to everyone else on the planet, everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then they develop generally these grandiose ideas about themselves, okay? And that makes up for this incredibly shameful or humiliating wound that they experienced at some point younger in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that point, I mean, the narcissist doesn't even remember what that was.
So it's like their protection blanket, in a sense, this whole narcissistic behavior.
It's a full virtual reality.
Impenetrable.
Now, all of us have some degree of narcissism. So if you have, like, if you're 50% narcissistic and 50% codependent, because everybody's a combination of both, then you can actually talk to that person. But at those moments that they shift to the narcissistic side, they're very lost in that.
Mm-hmm.
They can't see their way out.
Yes. Okay. So, but like this, okay. So I have a person in mind in our lives that Kevin is like, this person is so narcissistic.
Mm-hmm.
And this person's very negative.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never hear a positive thing come out of this person's mouth. They're always negative, always complaining, always miserable, always unhappy, and can't get out of their own way. Like literally can't get out of it. Like I feel like this person is trapped in their misery and doesn't know how to fix it. And so if you think about like not the psychopathic like narcissists, like these narcissists, so this person had something happen to them when they were younger. And it doesn't have to be like what most people say happens when they were younger, like molestation or something, some kind of trauma. And then to protect themselves, they coded themselves with this new reality, and their new reality became their real reality.
That's correct.
And now they don't even know what had happened to get them there.
No.
Right?
Yeah, you're probably talking about something called an inverted narcissist. They're upside down from the grandiose thing. They still believe they're grandiose victims,
mm-hmm.
but they've flipped it upside down so that really, you know, their negativity is right and is the
yes.
most right thing in
yes.
the universe.
What's
yes.
the term of that again?
Inverted narcissist.
I think
it's like turning a bottle of milk upside down. It's
yeah. Literally... No, you're 100% right about this person. Yeah. And I know you probably even know who we're talking about, but
I don't.
But because there's the narcissism, like, you know, these really powerful men that just think mm-hmm. they can do whatever they want, like a Harvey Weinstein, right?
Yeah. These are malignant narcissists, and you know, that's a term that's not in the DSM-5 quite yet, but pathological narcissism is. The malignant narcissist is somebody who it's like malignant cancer. It spreads out onto everybody else.
Whoa.
So
like meaning their
Harvey Weinstein had whatever
their victims, or he creates more narcissists.
He creates more victims.
Yeah. Yeah.
And has zero regard for that.
Yeah.
The real serious narcissists in our society, the really high pathological malignant ones, they will literally suck your energy, suck your blood, and when there's nothing left to get, they will turn and walk away and, you know, let literally the buzzards pick your bone. They
yeah.
will never think about you again. That's not even in their playbook.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And the inverted narcissist, I feel like the inverted narcissist is what most people deal with on a more regular basis, right? Don't you feel like there's more of that kind of just it's all about them, even
well,
on like
that isn't necessarily an inverted narcissist. That's the mainline narcissist.
Oh, shit, there's so many narcissists I can't even keep up.
Well,
mainline narcissist, an inverted narcissist, a malignant narcissist.
That's right. Narcissist. And as the saying goes, there's as many brands of narcissists as there are narcissists. You know, I mean, they come in all shapes and colors, you know.
Like candy bars. Okay.
The codependents, on the other hand, they have an injury somewhere deep inside as well, but they both are into control. I think that's the common ground they share.
Yes.
Both are trying to control their environment.
Mm-hmm.
The codependent, on the other hand, is trying to fix their environment. The narcissist is trying to dominate their environment, which is entirely different. I mean, if you were to get stuck on a deserted island with a codependent or a narcissist, definitely pick the codependent. They'd go out and they'd fish for you. They'd get lobster. They'd do the laundry. Do you love me now?
That would be Kevin.
The honey-do list, right?
Oh, God. Oh, no. Now you got to remind him about the honey-do list. You know what? I actually, it's so funny. After we got married and we were back here in LA, talked about this on the radio, I had a moment in the morning when I realized, oh my God, this is what he means. I'm just like barking out things that need to get done in the morning, right? Like, oh, we got to do this, or we got to do that, or can you do this? Can you do that? And I thought about him, like, he never asks me to do anything. And I realized it finally, but at least I did the honey-do list. I get it.
Better late than late.
Yeah. Okay. So go back to the main line here.
Well,
you were saying if you were on a deserted island, you'd want the codependent.
I'd rather be with a codependent.
You'd want Kevin.
Yeah, the narcissist could be a bodybuilder that would sit there and make you fish and crack rocks and coconuts.
And you'd be like 100 pounds soaking wet, and they're like 250 jacked, and like I have to go wrestle the tiger for food?
And, yeah, that's right. And enlisting you as their slave, no question about it. I think the reason it's a good reason to be talking about this today is, you know, it became very popularized in the 80s and 90s, and people have forgotten a lot about it now. And we are in a society right now that is – these are the two great societal pathologies in my mind today. They're everywhere. It's everywhere.
Narcissists and codependents.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they're the two
like
social,
male and females.
Big social –
right?
Yep. Well, if you wish, yin and yang.
I'm like, what are the other two big things we got around here?
Okay,
right?
So I think I got a question.
Yeah.
So if someone is diagnosed as an extreme narcissist, what jobs are they allowed to hold from then going forward?
Well, they can.
Can it be a doctor? Can it be a nurse? Yeah, can it be a police officer?
Yeah, absolutely. There's no limitation to that.
Right. So the diagnosis in and of itself doesn't prevent anything from someone functioning in society.
It's just how they're going to be. Like, do you want the narcissistic doctor that's not going to listen to you when you're saying, no, I know my body. This is not right. And they're like, I'm amazing. I have a master's and a PhD and an FRD and a 241 and FU. You don't know what you're talking about. Right?
Well, yeah, there's industries that attract more narcissists than others. But, you know, I thought about this and I thought I might be asked this question. Honestly, it's across the board. It doesn't matter where you go. You could be in 7-Eleven. Nobody can restrict you from getting a job because somebody's called you a narcissist.
Oh, but they raided them yesterday, so they do restrict you.
They raided who?
The immigration. Yeah. Immigration raided all the 7-Elevens yesterday.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, sorry.
Did they really do that?
Yeah, kind of like a messed up joke, but I had to go there.
Well, we have a president.
Not that I'm joking. I'm just informing, but.
We have a president that's an extreme narcissist.
Are you making that diagnosis right now, sir?
I'm not diagnosing. Am I making the observation?
Very good.
And that's the problem. Everybody is fending off the word diagnosis because there's a rule. Unless you've actually had that patient in your office, you can't make a diagnosis. But, you know, you can observe, you know, a serial killer without diagnosing him, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw him kill 15 people,
see,
so.
We can see the observation of this. And it's not. It's pointed out by hundreds, if not thousands at this point, of psychiatrists and psychotherapists, and not to mention Michael Moore as well. You know, this is who he is. He's created an alternative reality. You know, people, the question is thrown up in the air. Is Donald Trump lying or is he not lying? Because the New York Times lists how many lies he's told. I'm of the personal bent that he doesn't lie. He's deluded. It's in a delusional state in an alternative reality.
Yeah.
He does not look at it like that.
I think that where the lies maybe come in are him, like what he's adopted is whatever happens. This is what I had seen of him before presidency is if you're coming at me, I'm coming at you guns blazing and I'm going to fight harder and I'm going to be more ruthless at you until you are too weak to stop. And so, or you're weak enough to stop. And so what he'll do is he'll throw things out that maybe aren't true because he doesn't care. Because at the end of the day, no matter who challenges him, he's going to keep on fighting and fighting and fighting. And at the end of the day, he still stands and wins.
Well, he's defending his quote-unquote alternative virtual reality to the death. That's what he's really doing. He's created this airtight, you know, bulletproof reality over here, and if anybody challenges it, he has to fight for the death, because if it breaches it, then
it breaches his truth.
Thing.
Yeah.
So that brings me right to my question I was going to ask later. Can a narcissist fix themselves? Can they break their own reality and come back to the general reality?
It would take a lot of consciousness to do that. For example, I say to my patients, if I was to put an ad in the LA Times, you know, come to a weekend seminar, I will, you know, completely cure you of your codependency, I would get phone calls. Definitely, I could stay home and get phone calls. But if I did the same with narcissism and get over your narcissism in one weekend, I might as well go fishing because nobody is going to call.
Well, because here's why a lot of people think that that's powerful is you associate power with narcissists because most of the people in power are narcissists. Like we're seeing even the stuff with Kat Sadler at E, you know, executives are coming out and they're saying exactly what they said months ago, right? Months ago, their argument to why Kat Sadler's pay was different than Jason Kennedy's was because they had different roles at the network. And then that was obviously not true, right? Like she's doing a bunch of other shows as well. And then the executives came out recently and they said the same thing again. And so to me, it's like you just have to keep sticking by whatever you want people to believe. And if you say it firmly enough and you're curt enough, you're hopeful that people are going to be too scared to try to fight back again. And so, and I hope I'm making sense. I feel like I'm kind of maybe, but not as well as I'd like to. But the point is that narcissists are so strong And they just think that, like, I'm going to win. It's a tug of war.
Yeah, they're very tenacious.
Yeah, I'm going to win. At the end of the day, when Trump was fighting Rosie and calling her a fat pig and whatever, he was just beating her down to a place where eventually she would quit fighting him and he would win the tug of war. And that's what I see him doing every day with everybody. He's felt like a cornered rat from day one because he didn't believe he was ever going to win. I said that at the very beginning, yes, because I had a friend that was there and they witnessed everyone be in shock. And now the New York Times, I believe it was, wrote the whole article on this, or someone wrote an article about
it. Came out recently.
Yeah, it did come out recently that that was the case. And I feel like, you know, to be in power, there has to be some level of narcissism.
Oh, I would think that every president we've ever had is a narcissist.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you not be?
But and I think we're seeing a different side of, well,
this is the most intense we've ever seen.
Exactly.
Most intense.
And I think
on
it's because he felt cornered and he was used to being loved and admired, and he wasn't anymore. And so he had to revert to what he knows best, and that's to fight.
Here's my main concern, right? And we can say Donald Trump, and I try to not be too political, but
me too.
Wouldn't it be possible that if you know someone's a narcissist and you know to what extent that they are probably easier to manipulate?
Right? A narcissist is easier to manipulate?
Yeah, I'm concerned that a narcissist would be easier to manipulate because you know they're going to defend their reality.
AJ has got a point here that's very accurate, which is the narcissist, because they have created a false reality, this bulletproof reality that nobody else is in. Remember, there's only room for one person in that reality.
Yeah.
They're very gullible.
Right.
No way.
Of course. That's my
they
point.
They are way more gullible than the average person. And if you know how to play it right, how to manipulate a narcissist, if you do it seamlessly, they will buy the most ridiculous and wild and crazy stuff you can even imagine.
Well, because they're fear-based, too.
Well, also, they're fantasy-based. So, you know, if they think they're the greatest lover in the world, you say, you know, you really probably are the greatest lover. How did you get like that? They will. You
eat
think
that
somebody
up.
Else would go, oh, shut up. You know, quit putting me on. You know, they
you
will.
Butter them
they
up
will
to get what you want?
If you have this conversation with Harvey Weinstein, believe me, he'll get into it with you.
Interesting. No. Yeah.
Yeah. But the reality is not.
Okay.
The reality is not based in reality.
I want ways for everyone who's listening to be able to manipulate their narcissistic boss. I'm so glad I don't have any anymore. But you can teach people who are suffering like I was, Chuck, how to sweetly manipulate them for survival.
Yeah. I mean, you know, AJ said, or somebody just said, you know, does not make you a narcissist, if it was Lauren, if you manipulate the narcissist. Well, no, it's really a survival move.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody needs to know how to manipulate the narcissist, or you're going to get manipulated.
Yes.
It's going to be you or them.
Yeah. Kill or be killed, but we're not killing anybody. We're just maneuvering.
So two of the world's experts on this stuff are Ross Rosenberg. Anybody can look him up on the internet. Dr. Ross Rosenberg out of Chicago. He's an expert in codependency and narcissism partly, and an Israeli doctor of philosophy called Sam Vaknin. They both have extensive videos. Sam is a recovering pathological narcissist. You will not see many of them in the world, especially admitted, as per AJ's question. And Vaknin says there's three ways to manipulate the narcissist. Number one, to withhold the narcissistic supply. The narcissistic supply, astutely put, simply is the need to be superior to everyone else. So that's what the narcissist is seeking, that approval, that validation that they are superior, not just to who they're dealing with, but to everyone else on the planet. There's a lot of narcissists that voted for Donald Trump. And let me tell you, secretly, they're going, well, we have one of ours in the White House right now, except secretly, I should be the president, not him.
Interesting.
Every one of them believes they're superior to every other one. There's an incredible competition between narcissists.
Okay.
So number one, withhold the narcissistic supply. Now that wouldn't work with a guy in a 7-Eleven clerk, because he doesn't care whether you withhold the supply or not.
What does that mean?
You don't let him be superior to you. You do not allow in any way, if they start boasting about how, like you hear, again, Donald Trump is someone we all know, how great he is, that his crowd was the biggest of all the, you go, no, it wasn't. Or, no, I didn't see anybody there. You know, I mean, you absolutely frustrate it. That's one way.
Wait, I've only sucked their asses and let them think that they were amazing. And well, that's clearly why I've suffered.
No, now we're into technique number two.
Okay.
Which is to become a reliable source of the narcissist.
Oh, yeah, I'm a reliable source.
Exactly the opposite. Now, you got to, again, do this seemingly with tongue in cheek, seamlessly, so they don't know you're doing it.
Yeah.
But that gullibility that we were talking about, AJ, yeah, that, well, they'll suck it right in.
Yeah.
And then they'll be a trusted confidant that only you really understand
so them.
Only you see their greatness.
Okay.
And the third way is what a lot of people consider the most dangerous, which is collusion. You know, to joining in a collaboration. Join in their psychosis with them.
That's dangerous.
You get right into it, and you get into the fantasy like it's real.
Like Steve Bannon?
Oh, yeah. Well, more like Donald Trump, though. But,
well, clearly that way. No, but like, wasn't Steve Bannon like, listen, I don't know much about them or whatever, but I know that like they were kind of like, if you're either with us or you're against us, and like he was.
So... And they can't see this. It has to be seamless. Literally what you're doing, it sounds the most dangerous, the third way, but it's actually the most fun to join in their fantasy.
But this is what guys do, Chuck. The guys do this shit. The women have so much integrity that we sit there and we suffer at their hands, but the guys all do it. They go golfing with each other. This guy could be a serial killer, and they're like right up their ass. They don't care.
Yeah.
As long as they're going to make them win.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And it has to be done seamlessly at that level. And in the bottom line of technique number three, you're really turning them into a cartoon character.
Oh, I like
what
that.
They don't know it.
They cannot see it.
What if they catch you, Chuck? What happens then?
They have to kill you.
If they touch you?
Catch you. Catch you manipulating them.
We gotta go, you guys.
Oh, if they catch you, they'll just get angry.
Yeah, and you're screwed. You're dead. Guys, if you want to know more about Chuck and his work, you can go to his website, psychoenergetic.com. AJ Jolivet, if you want to work with AJ, you can email him at sales@jolivet.com. That's going to be on our website, mariamenounos.com. Just click on Sirius. And in the meantime, Chuck, you have to come back because we have so much more to talk about.
All right, guys, coming up, Dr. Habib Sadeghi is going to share his secrets to cleansing yourself emotionally and healing your body. Enjoy.
I've always loved going one-on-one with people.
Welcome back to Conversations with Maria Menounos. Best of the week.
Guys, my next guest is an integrative doctor, author, Goop contributor, and healer to the stars like Gwyneth Paltrow, Chris Martin, Emily Blunt, and so many more. So many more, as you read in his... in his book. Today, he's going to teach us how to gain clarity in our lives and in our health. Welcome, Dr. Habib Sadeghi.
Yay!
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Tikanes. What a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Yeah. Glad to have you.
Thank you.
I was reading, of course, the book, which is amazing, and my first question was answered instantly, which was, how did you end up in this type of practice? And I'd love for everybody to know a little bit about your journey. You were diagnosed with testicular cancer, and you weren't really pleased with their kind of prescription for you of all the chemo and radiation and all of these things. So you went on this journey to find your path, which I think is really amazing. And I also think it's amazing, which was something that I have said about my tumor, is that this was the best thing that ever happened to you. And it's not the best thing that just happened to you. It's the best thing that happened to everyone, because look at how many lives you're affecting because you said, this doesn't feel right in my body.
Yeah.
So talk to us a little bit about that feeling and how you acted on it, because I think under those extreme circumstances, when you hear I have cancer, people panic. And I know, because when my mom was diagnosed with brain cancer, I was so freaked out. But then I went into like quarterback producer mode and started doing all the work for her to make sure that we knew where she was going to go and what she was going to do. But, you know, it's so easy to just listen to the white lab coats, because they're supposed to know better. And you talk all about this, you know, they don't. You know you better than you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you for that introduction. My journey, it was second year medical school, and it was every week we memorize a phone book, and then you take a test, and then you're supposed to forget everything and start another phone book. So it was in the transition between the weeks. And right around 2 o'clock in the morning, I was awakened by this voice in my left ear that basically said, check yourself. And I checked my testicle and I found something. And I couldn't go back to sleep. I started reading about it and what it could be. And so in the morning, I called my brother, who was UC San Diego doing internal medicine, who's a physician. And he says, look, medical students, they're supposed to be hypochondriacs. What system are you studying? And it was renal system, which is urogenital and testicles and kidneys. And to make a long story short, fast forward it, it turned out to be testicular cancer. And it just at the time, and I'm not an advocate of this, at the time, what they were offering, which was to basically flay me open from my pubic bone all the way to my chest bone, taking out my gut, getting radiation, and then 4 cycles of, you know, cisplatinum chemotherapy. For me at the time, it just seemed really aggressive, you know, and I did it differently. I took a sabbatical from medical school. And I started traveling and learning different modalities.
You went to Mexico and Germany, right?
Yeah, ended up in India. And I was specifically looking for different options, different modalities. And, you know, when I go back and I connect to this 26-year-old that had the courage to do that, I get tearful because I didn't have a Dr. Sadeghi back then, you know, and part of, I get choked up every time I think about it. So this is twice that you've made me choke up. The first time was playing, you know, the music, Everglow, which was dedicated to my brother and I by just a dear friend. Look, the reality of it is that for me, when I, as a physician, as a trained medical doctor, I really don't think that we get sick, we get diseased because we're punished. I think that what happens is inadvertently we create this field around us that keeps us locked in. And sometimes we need to shake things up. And so really cancer for me at the time, given what I was going through, it was a compassionate way to break up the field that I was so encased in.
Isn't that what we were just talking about before the show?
Right.
That's so amazing.
Yeah.
Look, yeah.
That's why I'm here. Really, the reason that I wrote the book was to give back. I want to be available. I want to be accessible. And I was lucky enough since the age of 26, you know, being a seasoned veteran in the trenches of cancer, neurological issues, what my brother dealt with Parkinson's disease, there's certain technologies, there's certain practical things that that I've learned. And these are age-old wisdoms that we've forgotten. And, you know, and I refer to it as IPACT. It's an acronym, I-P-A-C-T. So it doesn't matter what's coming at you. When you look at it and you got a formula, you can center yourself. And it's, you know, what's important is the me that I take into any disease, any challenge, than the challenge that's coming at me. That's really the essence of the book.
I love that. It's such an important message, I think, because, you know, for people to have more clarity, right? Like there's so much talk about clarity in the book, and I've been on this journey the last 7 months, kind of having all these breakthroughs and getting clarity on why I am the way I am, why I had all this anxiety, why I was not really me for so long. And I couldn't explain it. I was like, why? I feel so stuck and trapped and just, I was so angry. I didn't know why. Yeah. And I think, you know, it's so important for us to really find a way to get that clarity. How do people who are working crazy hours, like I was and like so many people are, thank you technology, how do people figure out a way to get that clarity? Because I don't know if 20 minutes a day of meditation is going to do enough of that to get you to have, I mean, what I've seen in the 7 months I've been off and for the most part, I have been off other than this show and a few things here and there, I've gained so much clarity that is going to help me. It's already helping me. But this next chapter of my life is going to be is already so much happier and so much more peaceful because of it. But I think about it, and if I didn't get this brain tumor, I would never have had that opportunity.
Such a profound way of putting it, and I'm really proud of you for holding it that way.
Thanks.
There's a study that just came out of University of Oregon. It was published. What they did was they took, I think, maybe 20 women, and they said, look, why don't you just do journaling and focus on gratitude? And then 20 women that they would just write freely, but they wouldn't focus on gratitude. Watch this. Scientifically, they did MRI studies on the women that they were focusing on gratitude. What occurred was that the cellular metabolism on this specific part of the brain that's referred to as ventromedial prefrontal cortex changed. Do you see how profound that is?
Yeah.
That your intention has everything to do with it.
So believe it. I was having dinner, ironically, with Rachel Platten. She's a brilliant songwriter and performer. And we were talking about gratitude and God yesterday. We had this whole dinner. That's all we talked about. We just couldn't stop. And I said, like, the second I embraced all of this as a gift, and the second I embraced all of this as, like, God loving me enough to give me all of this, everything has come. It's been like a flood of just beauty that has just come my way. And like, it just keeps coming, whether it's financial and the things that I would normally be so afraid of, like my financial security and all, being flooded, like overwhelmed in the opposite direction.
I think too, when you change the way you look at things, I mean, it's so true. It's like, yes, the way, and when you look at things from like, this is a gift, I'm grateful for all I have, and you don't focus on what you don't have.
Yes.
And you're always like, looking at the glass, what is it, half
empty or half, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you look at life differently, your life is different.
Yeah, I mean, it all comes, you guys.
It's a life changer.
I see so many people suffer.
Yeah.
Like looking at it the other way, they suffer because they're, I don't have enough. They don't see the beauty, the love, everything that's right there in front of them.
Well, with gratitude, fear disappears too.
Yeah.
And so every day I'm like, I have like a little like shrine on my mantle in my bedroom. I have like my little icons that I've had since I was a little kid, and I pray and I'm like, thank you, God, my babies are still alive and they're with me. And you know, thank you for Kevin and thank you for my mom. And literally I say thank you about 1,000 times a day, and I'm so focused on it now. And like I said, everything just keeps coming.
Mm-hmm. You become part of a conversation that is larger than you and I. You realize that cancer or disease is not coming at you. The challenge that you or your listeners are having, it's not coming at you because they're bad. This is not a punitive consequence. Mm. This is a call to action. This is a way
to change your life.
That's right. The eye. See, when you look at the book, the cover of the book says it all. They don't really need to read the book. Just look up the book. The cover of the book is a cup. See, think about it. If I invite you, if Maria invites you, you're coming over, you're sitting down to have a cup of tea. What is the most important thing that you need to have that experience of having a cup of tea? Some people say it's the tea. They go to Mongolia. They go to this little village to find the perfect tea. Some people say it's the pH of the water, the temperature of the water. And I'm here to tell you that it's not. That the most important thing is the cup, it's the context. One of the exercises, practical, simple exercises in the book, I refer to it as guru. Gadget, unsaturation, and rejuvenation uninterrupted. Here, simple. One thing you could do right now. Go to your nearest electronic shop. Get yourself a very simple battery-operated clock. What would that do? Get rid of your cell phone.
Mm-hmm.
Don't allow the cell phone to be right next to where you sleep. I mean, right now, California, the research is, it's there scientific that it affects us,
mm-hmm.
especially with the specific organs such as a brain that is encased inside a box, a skull. Protect yourself. Simple mm-hmm. things you can do. Can you imagine waking up every day and instead of getting pulled in this black hole of your cell phone, and then the Instagram, and then you check the Facebook, and then you check the text messages, and then the emails. And before you know it,
30 minutes has passed. You know, you're late.
What do you do? Like, I'm on call all the time for birth, so I have to sleep with my phone on.
Yeah.
Like,
how many times have you gotten calls in the middle of the night?
Oh my God.
Really?
It's like, I got one last night. I mean, I get them all the time. So, well,
yeah, let me look at the doctors.
I would get a landline and have them call your landline so you can shut your phone off.
Yeah,
then,
I have one. It doesn't.
Well, why don't you get a pager? Look. Yeah. I love this book. Mm-hmm. This is a book that none of your listeners should read. But because it's right there. It says the book is The Dead Doctors Don't Lie. Dead doctors don't lie. You look at physicians. As physicians, we're supposed to be the healthiest because we know what to eat, what to do, exercise. Mm-hmm. But we're some of the sickest people on the planet.
Yeah.
We have the highest drug abuse rate. We have the worst rate when it comes to relationships.
And you're the worst. But doctors are the worst patients. Remember, I've told you,
right.
I'm trying to get one doctor to come to him, and he's just like, I'm the worst patient ever.
Wait, and why do you think that? Why do you think
because
you guys
there's no cup. If there is no cup, there is no tea. Look, most human beings, they actually believe you have stage 4 cancer, you're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
That your goose is cooked, they might stick a fork in you.
Yep.
I don't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
They told me, and 4 physicians had to go through this book before it was published. Why? The Clarity Cleanse. Because they couldn't believe it. Two years ago, I couldn't get insurance until 2 years ago. Because they said,
for your practice?
For me, as a human being. Because they said, you can't be alive.
You couldn't get health insurance because you had testicular cancer and they won't believe that it was in remission?
Testicular cancer, and I had only 30% chance of survival. But
so how did you heal? Tell us how you...
That's it. I created a cup. What does that mean? The cup, when you look at the cup and you say, what is that? The cup is the sacred feminine. The cup is the womb. The cup is the uterus. You deliver a lot of babies.
Mm-hmm.
Without a womb, there's no baby. Mm-hmm. It's actually the beauty, the sacredness of it.
It's the container.
It's the container.
That holds life.
Absolutely.
In your life.
Absolutely.
So if you don't have a cup... It's almost like your foundation. If you don't have a foundation.
It's a way to process things. When I went to City of Hope, and they're saying, everything is
City
published.
City of Hope.
City of Hope.
This is the irony.
Which is, look, it's one of the renowned, globally, incredible places on the planet when it comes to cancer. And I have a lot of respect for them. However, I publish all part of my medical records, and it says it. I have 30% chance of survival. Can you imagine what it was like every night you're going to sleep and they're telling you, and you're a second year medical student and everyone in your family and all your teachers, they're saying, all the professors, they're saying, you're crazy. You're going to die.
Yep.
And in the background, you
and
have
And especially
Scott,
if you don't do the chemo and radiation or you're a goner.
That's right. Well, that's what it was recommended. And on the background, you have... this gold medal, Scott Hamilton, that got testicular cancer around the same time, and he died. And you had Lance Armstrong, that it spread everywhere. They removed part of his brain. They removed part of his lungs. And thank God he doped. Why? Because it gave me hope. I looked at him and I said, the guy went through all
that. Wait, you said thank God he doped?
He doped because for me, he was an idol for a long time.
Oh.
Because I didn't know that.
Oh, so if he didn't dope, he wouldn't have been an idol and then you wouldn't have had him? Is that what you're saying?
Well,
as an idol?
I don't know. What I'm saying is I'm glad he doped because I was looking at him. The guy went through what I went through and look what he's doing with Tour de France.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it gave me hope. It gave me hope. You know, I'm not advocating what he did.
No,
whether,
of course.
All I'm saying is the irony of it.
Yeah.
Look, everything is connected with everything.
But what's interesting is like what you believe will be. Tony Robbins said that to me before I went into surgery. He goes, Maria, he goes, whatever you believe will be. And we've done this with our dogs. Yesterday, Kevin and I had this whole conversation with our dog baby. She's approaching 18. She was supposed to die at 15 and a half.
Mm.
Every doctor said you must put her to sleep. She has no chance of survival. No chance. Zero chance. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And on literally the day before we were going to do it, she starts running. She hadn't run or walked in over a month. She was in the hospital. And of course, she has a, you know, miracle. We threw a sweet 16 birthday party for her.
Mm.
And now she's approaching her 18th birthday and she's still here and she's still kissing us and loving us. And, you know, she's very fragile and we're definitely at the end, but I wanted to go back to this doctor. He did find out like 6 months later she was still alive. He's like, well, you guys have made fools of me. But I'm like, no, we've really now made fools of you. Mm. Because what you believe will be in love, the love we have given her and all of our dogs, is the reason that she's overcome. I know she doesn't want to leave us, and she love has healed so many things.
What you just said, and it's very profound. I don't know if I could say it any better.
Oh,
the dynamic of a family is important. There's a whole field called epigenetics that talks about what's referred to as transgenerational traumas. But this is the first time that you have a physician that has superimposed physiological studies, psychological studies, and spiritual studies. For instance, this is the first time that someone has isolated, how do you metabolize emotions such as shame, such as guilt? Mm-hmm. How do you create that? And you look at metabolism. I love it. Greek, which means ceaseless change, mm-hmm. endless change. But what is metabolism? It always starts with catabolism, where you break things down. And then there is anabolism. If there's a piece of broccoli in front of you, first you got to accept it. You got to open your mouth. You let it in. Then you start chewing it. You break it down. Then you stomach it. And then the whole process of digestion occurs. And then you pull what you want out of it. You pull out the phytonutrients, the N-acetylcysteine, mm-hmm. the trace minerals. But then what doesn't serve you, you let go. This is called metabolism. Mm-hmm. And no one has taught us that. As human beings, right, we're funneled with thoughts, not thinking. Thoughts are completely different.
Undisciplined thinking.
Yeah. Oof. Thoughts come in and they activate part of the brain to produce these chemicals that we call neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters create feelings. Feelings upregulate hormones, testosterone, estrogen, DHEA. And then here we are, we get these holding patterns called emotions. Well, gosh, a lifetime of emotions, feeling that you're a victim, you're trapped. I wonder what that creates. Mm-hmm. Here comes someone that says, look, I went through it, and this is what saved my life. And I couldn't really do much and save my brother, but as a way of giving back, why don't we do this? That's what really this conversation is about. Mm. This conversation is about you and your listener. Wherever they are, how do they start? Well, look, start every morning by 12 minutes. Sit down, get a piece of paper and a pen, and find out what your low-hanging fruits of your thoughts, feelings, emotions are. Write it down. Mm-hmm. And whatever you write, no one needs to discover it. Burn it. Get rid of it.
Yeah. Kevin did that. It helped him with his depression a lot.
Bingo.
He did like the 30-day purge, emotional purge.
He has. Yeah. Actually, I put your P12 in my next book because I have all my clients doing it. And we've worked with
P12.
Oh. It's this. Oh, you want to tell him?
No, yeah, it's great. It's called Purge Emotional Writing, 12 minutes. And the significance of 12, I explain in the book. Go ahead, Laura.
It's like ritual writing. And it's you do it every day. And you set a timer and you light a candle and you don't reread it. You write until the timer goes off. And when you're done, you just stop. And then you burn it. You don't reread it because you don't want to put it back in your subconscious. Mm-hmm. And there's a formula for why. It's like there's the fire does.
Yeah, it's fire is transformative. There mm-hmm. are four states on here, on Earth. There's solid, liquid, gas. Most people know about solid, liquid, gas, but there's a fourth state. Mm-hmm. It's called plasma. Isn't that interesting? We call it plasma, the very plasma that's within our body. Plasma, it's fire. So fire has transformative qualities. You know, and that's these are simple things that can be done. Group, P12. There's specific exercises such as walking specific way that can open things up.
Tell us about
like
that.
Like what?
If you walk, notice most people when they're
with your head up, right?
Exactly.
Is that what you said?
Yeah, I refer to it as chin up. If you just hold your chin up, it shifts the direction, the flow of blood into which part of the brain?
Huh.
It's incorrect. Look, University of Oregon, it just came out. All they did, they sat down and they wrote 12 minutes focusing on gratitude. What am I grateful for? The cellular metabolism deep in the brain changed.
Yeah.
Isn't that incredible?
Mm-hmm.
I wrote the book because I wanted to dispel the biggest lie that I was told as a medical doctor.
Which was?
And that is the dualism. That is the idea that the mind and body, they're separate.
That's what they teach you in medical school?
Of course. They say, look, listen, leave this stuff to psychologists that has to do with the head. Oh, we have a psychiatrist.
But everyone knows
it's
that
so connected.
Like, cancer especially is an emotional disease, right? Yeah. And yeah. So – and by the way, like the way I look at it, especially with my mom, I think, deserved – to have this happen to her so that she could change her life and that everyone could change around her and make her the focus, make her the queen, where she was, you know, always just giving to everybody else. And she's probably happier now than ever, to be honest.
Do you see how brilliant that is, what you just said? Do you realize that what you just said is the reason that when you look at autoimmune epidemic that it's occurring, autoimmune epidemics such as lupus, such as hepatitis, rheumatoid arthritis, Hashimoto's thyroiditis, there is a gender predilection.
So much of this.
There is 10 women for one man.
Yeah.
What you just said explains that gender predilection, and it's not. And I'm here to tell you that you know, right now, this is a larger conversation.
Mm-hmm.
This is a conversation about, my God, what does it mean to be healthy? What does it mean to be healing? My goodness, is there a relationship with me getting a specific form of tumor in a specific organ 2 months after my mother was diagnosed? Oh my God, is there a correlation between my, you know, my babies, my dogs getting, you know, brain tumor than what I've gone through? The conversation is this, that there is a field in a home that we hold, that we create, and if we don't clean it out, these muck will create dis-ease. It mm-hmm. will create diseases. And these mucks could be misunderstandings, misidentifications, misperceptions. Misuses of energy that we don't know what to do, but the process is simple. There is a metabolism of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Start by breaking things down, and sometimes a disease acts catabolically, acts as a way to break this field apart. And then you create a juxtaposition. What that means is you create a new way of holding things. To learn that, for me, it is really what it means to be a mature adult. And you can apply it to cancer. There could be clarity in cancer. There could be clarity in relating. There could be clarity in a marriage. There could be clarity in completion of a relationship. And I've been lucky enough as a mentor, a family doctor, to help people in various different directions. And they can apply this concept wherever they are.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, it's what... The conversation I'm having with people, and we'll take a break after this and come back, but you know, one of the conversations I'm having with women is what it means to be a woman, right?
Mm.
Like, we're out there, we feel like we have to be the perfect daughter, the perfect wife, the perfect employee, the perfect mother, the perfect everything. And we are doing 10 things to every one thing a man is doing, right? Like, man generally goes to work, comes home. That's it. Maybe he'll play with the kids or who knows. And I'm generalizing. Obviously, there are men who do more. But we are remembering everyone's birthdays. We're remembering to send flowers to the in-laws. We have so much going on in our heads that it is no wonder that we are ravaged by anxiety, by thyroid illnesses, and all kinds of different autoimmune issues because we don't even have the capacity to do this. And it is no wonder why we still struggle to compete with men because all their focus is on their career.
Yes.
We have to focus on 80 different things, and somehow we're that awesome that we do the 80 things pretty friggin' well, okay? But this is why we're all getting sick, and this is why I keep telling women, like, we have to slow the ride down.
But also, remember when I came on here and we were talking about fertility?
Yeah.
I always tell my pregnant clients, like, the people that are trying to get pregnant, that you can't get pregnant with a penis. Like, if you have a penis, you have to,
so
like, because you're so in your male energy.
Yeah, because we have
energy,
those, too. Yeah.
You have to soften a little bit or reclaim your feminine to get pregnant because, you know.
No cup. No fertility,
yeah.
No cup, no life,
right.
Yep.
No cup, no experience of tea.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with the phenotypic expression of whether you're a man or a woman. It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
What matters is, can you be a balanced human being?
Oh my God, what?
How much masculinity? Masculine is about this. Masculine is about doing.
Yeah.
Feminine is about this being,
mm-hmm.
the cup. Can you balance that? Or are you so rushed, so goal-oriented that you're going after day after day of doing things and you feel stuck and you're resentful and you don't know how to get out of it.
Yes, that's what I want you to help women figure out. How do we help my fellow ladies out there get out of that stuck feeling where we're maybe a little negative, maybe a little angry, maybe just super overwhelmed and anxiety and stressed and just... I just kept saying, I'm so tired of being responsible for everyone and everything. And I'm so tired of worrying about everyone and everything.
Well, and also getting off that hamster wheel, like that, where he was saying the goal oriented, you know, that's where you kind of, this thing has taken you off.
Yeah.
You
know? And I remember right before surgery working with a kinesiologist and he's like, what do you want? I'm like, I'm dying to be me. And so I know I'm not the only one. I speak to women all the time. And so how do you, other than getting a brain tumor.
But that was so profound that you just said, I'm dying to be me.
I mean,
did you hear what you just said?
Yeah.
But look what this is making you, what that made you do. It's you're becoming more you.
I mean,
you're more than you than you've ever probably, that you've been in a long, you're coming back to yourself.
Yeah.
Look, you know, a disease is a gentle prod to shift directions. That's really what it is.
And that's how we should look at it.
And when you look at it that way, it changes everything. You start by taking responsibility that this is a gift to be alive. It's a gift. It's not given.
Mm-hmm.
When you start there, things will start shifting and changing.
Well, and patience is so important. We talked about that last night at dinner. The priest that I went to see before my mom's surgery and before my surgery, and my priest now since the last year and a half, he kept saying ipomoni. In Greek, it means patience.
Mm.
And that has shifted so much for me too, where I now, it's really eased my anxiety because I'm like, well, it's not meant to be. It's not meant to be. Dr. Sadeghi, thank you so much for joining us. Of course, you can get his book, Clarity Cleanse, wherever books are sold. And you can find him on Instagram at Being Clarity Now. Lori Bregman, you can find her on Instagram at L Breggy. Thank you for joining us. As always, be nice people, make good choices. That does it for us, guys. Thank you so much for listening to our free Conversations with Maria Menounos podcast edition. Help us, please, by rating and commenting on iTunes, and be sure to tell a friend. Check us out on SiriusXM Stars Channel 109 weekdays at 1 p.m. Eastern. You can also hear us on demand on the SiriusXM app. Join our Conversations crew if you guys want to join our newsletter with life-changing tips and tricks, lots of great giveaways, and so much more. Please email us at conversationswithmaria@gmail.com, or you can click the link in my Instagram bio. Follow us at Maria Menounos, at SiriusXM Stars, at AJ Jolivet, at Lauren LaGrasso, and remember, guys, be nice people, make good choices.